Live from Music Row in Nashville, this is Roy Mathock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour.
And good morning. This is Roy Mathock Jr., and we're going to be talking money today. That's what I do. I've been doing this for many, many, many years, helping people get their finances straight and, you know, moving in the right direction. Especially, you know, today it's kind of an interesting day to talk about money from the standpoint that, you know, we've had this government shutdown. And, you know, the government shutdown to me is kind of funny the way people are reacting to this. And you know, if you're a government worker, I'm sorry you've been, you know, out for this period of time, but it's no different than any other time that people lose their jobs. It's just the government this time. And in the case of the government, you know, of course, they're going to end up getting their pay. But I read an article that said 78% of all people are living paycheck to paycheck, and that 10% of those making over $100,000 a year are living paycheck to paycheck. So what's happening is the government's kind of waking up, you know, a lot of people to maybe say, you know, I might need to get my finances straight. Maybe I need to have an emergency fund. Maybe I need to do things like that. And so today I'm going to talk about seven keys to getting your finances in order, all the way from the basics of setting up a budget to creating your emergency fund, all the way up to retirement planning, as well as being able to you know, pay your home off and things like that. If you would like to call in for any questions, 615-737-9522, 615-737-9522 is the number. And we'll be happy to answer your questions regarding money. But I thought I would start with, you know, the budget. You know, people ask me all the time, they say, how do I do this? You know, and I remember one time I was sitting in front of a computer, and it was years and years ago, and I'd been trying to figure something out on the computer, how to do it, and a guy came up behind me. He says, what are you trying to do? And I told him, and he said, all you got to do is click here and do this, and then the next thing you know, everything I'd been sitting there for, you know, the whole morning trying to figure out how to do, he was able to teach me within just a few seconds. And the budget is that way. I've seen people try to set their budget up, and the first thing they do is they make a list of their bills, and I'll remind them that that's an accounting system. It doesn't really have anything to do with your spending. It's just what you have spent. So they make a list of the bills. Then I've seen them where they write down everything that they ever spend. You know, they go to the market, and they write down, I spent $2.32 on a drink or something like that, and never worked. And so what I'm going to do today is talk about a usable way to start your month off and start your week off to set your budget up. So let's start with setting up a spending plan. The first thing that we need to do when it comes to spending is we need to get some idea initially as to what our fixed expenses are. Our fixed expenses, you know, would include your house payment, your electric bill, if you have a car payment, if you have any type of debt that's going on in there. Included in those fixed expenses should be your expense, which is saving money. And one of the keys to getting ahead is called pay yourself first. And so we start with that. We get a list of what is our fixed expenses. We also need to include things like maintenance. We need to include vacations. All these kind of things are going to go into this overall cost to be able to set things up, because by pre-planning future expenses, that puts us in a position to where we can not go into debt when we do things like Christmas or vacations and things like that. So it starts out that way. And I recommend that you have two accounts. If you're married, you would have three accounts. The first account is called the draft account. Now, how does the draft account work? You take your account, everything that's fixed like that, and I recommend you have all your income going into this one account, and then I have all of your outgo, meaning all of your bills, set up automatically. And what's going to happen is every bill is going to get paid on time, so you're not going to have to worry about late charges and things like that. And then what you do is you take that draft account. It's going to take a little bit of time to set it up, and then take that and set up automated payments on every bit of the bills going out, in addition to setting up any retirement plans if you're at that point, or if it's an emergency fund or whatever it may be. Now, after that, you're going to look and say, how much do I need to set aside for future expenses? So we're going to look at car replacement. We're going to look at travel. If you're going on vacation, we're going to look at Christmas, maintenance, different things like that, and you come up with that number. So all of this takes a little bit of time, and that money's going to – all this is in this draft account. Now, the draft account is your – all of your income goes in there, and each month it should be getting larger. The balance should be getting larger, and then what's going to happen when it comes time to – purchase another car, you're going to go hit that draft account because you've put aside, you know, $300 a month to replace your car, and now it's time for car replacement. So you're going to pull that out. You may pull, you know, $5,000 or $6,000 out plus your car, and you go get you another used car. And you have Christmas, and you come up with whatever that is. You pull that cash out, and so it's going to go up and go down, go up and go down. But your fixed expenses, along with savings, keep coming out of that. Now, after you calculate that, then I recommend you come up with a weekly expense that you're going to have. What are your weekly expenses? So you may come up with, husband and wife may come up with, our weekly spending money is a couple $100 a week each. And so what we're going to do is each week on Sunday, we're going to take and we're going to transfer into that account the amount of money that we're going to live on that week. So now the only thing we have to manage that week is a couple $100. And if the end of the week, if we spend less than $200, if that's our budget, then we were under budget. And if you want to, the next week you can take $180 if you were under that. And now you're working under your budget. Everything got paid for. All of your savings were set up. If you've got a debt elimination plan, you're in the process of doing that, because one of the keys to debt elimination is to set a fixed payment, not the minimum payment. And so now what you have is a system to control spending. So the first step in getting your finances straight is to stop spending more money than you bring in. The best way to do it is to have a plan. And so we start with a cash flow plan or a budget. That type of thing I've got right in my account. I've got a draft account. I got my personal account. I've been doing that kind of stuff, been doing that for years, and it allows me to kind of pay attention to where I'm at. I even have text messages sent to me every afternoon that tells my balance, and then that way I know, you know, how much money I have left for the rest of the week. The other thing that I do is if I need cash, I use it right out of that personal account. You know, the ATM is fine if it's a limited number of amount of money that you're going to be able to pull out that week. And so that's step number one. So if you have questions on how to set this up, give me a call, 615-737-9522. That's 615-737-9522. My name is Roy Matlock Jr., and we are going to continue down this path of talking money. So step number one in creating your plan is to spend less than you make. Now, as your income goes up, what's going to happen? That's going to allow you to have more savings. So most people, what they do is as they make more money, they end up spending more money. So what we're going to do is talk about the next step, which is creating a plan to stay out of debt, and that's called the emergency fund. 615-737-9522, and we'll be right back.
This is Roy Matlock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour. Now, back to the Money and Business Hour with Roy Matlock Jr.
Okay, we're back. Roy Matlock Jr. here, and talking money. And today, we're going through kind of the steps that I would take if you want to get your finances started in the right direction. You know, it's a new year. We're almost a month into it. And, you know, you want to wake up next year and say, change happened. And the only way change happens is if you change. And so what we're going to do now is talk about the next step, which is partly the way you get out of debt and at the same time stay out of debt. And that's called your emergency fund. You know, when you have a bank account that's set, you tend to not borrow money. So what happens is if you're in a situation where you need to, you have an emergency, if you lose a job, things like that, the last thing you're going to be doing is borrowing money if, in fact, you can just ride through that. And the way you do that is through an emergency fund. So how much money is an emergency fund? For most people, it's about 90 days, 3 to 6 months of earnings. All right. Or in I say earnings of expenses, which is mostly what people end up saying earnings. So 3 to 6 months. Should I have 6 months? Well, if you are a single income earner and you have a family, I would say 6 months would be more in line. If you both are working, then I would say 3 months would be more in line. And so what happens is we set aside an emergency fund. You can pay, have it just in a simple savings account. You can have it in a money market account. I used to tell people, if you want to put it in a money market mutual fund and don't have check writing on it, that'll make it a little bit more difficult to get to, but you can get it within a couple days. And why do we have an emergency fund? The first thing is in order to keep us from going in debt. You know, if we have an emergency and we have no money, if our car breaks down, what's the first thing that we do? We go get it fixed. And when we get it fixed, we put it on a credit card or something like that. So the first reason you have the emergency fund is to keep you from going in debt. Now, what if you are in debt right now? What I would tell you to do is save $1,000 to $1,500, leave that as your emergency fund, and then at that point, I would start trying to eliminate debt. And then that, as I eliminate debt, that is non-mortgage debt, cars, credit cards, things like that, that's going to free you up money to put into your emergency fund. So where do we put the emergency fund? We have it in a simple bank account, or we have it in a money market mutual fund, something like that, a money market account. So now we have a cash flow plan. We are saving first to develop the emergency fund. We're going to look at a plan to get out of debt. What's the best way to get out of debt? The most important thing you're going to find in getting out of debt is to stop digging deeper. And what that means is to get on a good spending plan to where you're spending less than you make. That allows you to free up cash, and that cash can be applied toward your debt. And what kind of debt do we go after first? We go after anything to do with, you know, credit cards, car payments, things like that. And one of the things that you need to know about debt as it relates to credit cards and things like that is every time you pay a payment on a credit card, the payment goes down the next month. So what happens is effectively you're refinancing that debt over an extended period of time. To give you kind of an example, if you pay minimum payments, it'll take about 30 years to get out of debt. In some cases. But if you pay level payments, you'll get out of debt usually in about 4 years. So that's the difference in paying a fixed amount. So if I'm in my draft account, I'm going to set up an automatic payment that is level to pay to all of these different debts. I would focus any additional cash that I have. I put it toward the smallest debt. I do that because that will eliminate that one. It'll be less, you know, number of debts equal a better attitude. And so then what ends up happening is I take that debt that I was paying to one, I raise in my draft account, in my bill pay system, I raise it and I automate it. So what happens is over time I'm automating all of my debts until they're gone. And so the first step is to get on a plan to cut what you're doing to where you're spending less than you make. You may need to make some extra income in order to get out of debt. But the bottom line is that until you get rid of your cars, car payments, credit card payments, all those kind of things, it's very difficult for you to get ahead. And so step number two is the emergency fund. Step number three is a debt elimination plan. Now, Step number four in protecting yourself, that is having the proper insurance. We're going to go over some different things that you need to be aware of when it comes to insurance. You know, when we have cars, we need to have the proper amount of liability insurance. What happens is this, the minimum liability here in Tennessee is not enough for you to pay for an expensive car if you're in an accident and you hit somebody. If you hurt somebody, it's not enough to protect you. I know I was in an accident one time, and it was I felt like a person just trying to take advantage of me, and they sued me for $250,000, and I think it had to do with the kind of car I was driving. And so they sued me, and it went on, but I had a $500,000 insurance policy, and I had a $2 million umbrella policy for liability. And what an umbrella policy is a insurance policy that covers you in the event that you have a big loss, and it covers you for liability for your house. It's a personal liability policy. If you have a wreck, somebody gets hurt, at your house, they fall and hurt themselves, that kind of thing. And so what I would recommend is to make sure and look at your home and auto insurance. Make sure that you have adequate liability coverage in order to protect yourself in the event something like what happened to me happens. Once you do that, you want to consider looking at your deductibles. One of the ways that you become self-insured is by raising the deductibles as you accumulate more money. So let's say that you have your emergency fund in order and you've got some assets, then one of the things you might consider is raising your deductibles. Now, why do you raise your deductibles? Because raising deductibles will save you money each year on your premiums. So I know when I've had homeowners insurance, I've always done $2,500 deductibles. Car insurance, I do a $1,000 deductible, and sometimes even more than that. And in many cases, on used cars, I did not carry anything but liability insurance. I figured, hey, I can take the loss, you know, if I wreck my car or something like that. The next thing that you want to look at is getting the right health insurance. You know, health insurance nowadays is a big topic all the time. So how do you know the right kind of health insurance? You know, my opinion has always been that health insurance is just like anything else. You want to become self-insured as quickly as possible. Now, not completely self-insured, but at least self-insured to the point that you can pay for your own doctor's visits and things like that. And so what I tell people is when you go into buying health insurance, this is the way I buy health insurance. I buy what's called catastrophic health insurance. What catastrophic is where you have high deductibles. I think my deductible is $7,500. And what I do is I go in and I negotiate with the providers for a cash price. And I go in and everywhere I go, I say, how much is it if I pay you right now? I'll pay you in full right now. And it'll amaze you how much less money it costs if you don't run it through the insurance. I had an MRI done on my knee, and I think the difference was $1,500 if it goes through insurance toward my deductible, or $400 if I paid cash on the spot. So I pay cash on the spot. It's over with. They're glad to get the cash. They don't have to collect and wait on their money. And I'm glad that I was able to get a better deal. I remember when my first child was born, I went to the hospital and I negotiated a cash in advance for the delivery of my daughter and saved a fortune back during that time. And so you can negotiate with these places if you do it in advance. So we've got to look at the right liability coverage. We got to look at the right health insurance coverage, because in both cases, a big loss in either one of those things can put you into spiraling into bankruptcy even. Now let's talk about some other things that we need to look at. What about life insurance? Well, life insurance is something that most people don't understand, but life insurance is really not life insurance. It's income replacement. And what income replacement means is that Your family is a family unit that's like a business. And when I say a business, you know, you both work, you have a profit and loss if you're both working, and that profit and loss is your income less your expenses. And most people, when they're out there, their profit and loss, if they can have a 15% profit per month, and that means that they're saving 15% after all their expenses and taxes, then they're doing really well. So that means that automatically, people are about 85, 90%, and most people even 95% of everything they bring in goes right back out the door. So if you're both working and something happened to either one of you and your incomes are about the same, you've got 95% that you need to replace, but you've only got 50% of it. So now you're 45% in the hole. So how do you go about doing that? Well, you buy term life insurance. And what I always tell people is if you want to find out how much you need, all you do is take your income, make an assumption to begin with that you're not going to get a raise, and let's just take a look at how much income you're going to earn between now and the time you retire. So if you're 30 years old, you've got 35 years, and if you are making $50,000 a year, you would multiply 50 times 35. That's about $1,750,000, something like that. That is the amount of income that you're going to earn without a raise between now and the time you retire. That income is your family business income. You, your spouse, if your spouse is making the similar money, you guys now have $3.5 million in family income that's going to come along without a raise. Now, we all feel like we're going to get a raise, so we need to add inflation to that. So, well, how is that going to work? Okay, so now we come up with today we need X amount, $1.5 million, okay, or $1.75 million. Now, how do we go about determining from that number how much we actually need? So I pull a chart out and I say, well, $1,750,000. If I could invest money at 8%, which is a good investment number, and 8%, I could replace that income for $700,000. So now $1,750,000 of earned income, future income, I can replace that for $700,000. I would buy term insurance. I would lock it in. If you're 30 years old, I would lock it in all the way to, you know, get a 30 or 35 year term policy. Premiums stay the same. You're able to buy that. And at that age, you can get it for very inexpensive. Never buy cash value. It's low value, high cost. Term insurance allows you to get the most for your dollar. We're going to continue on this when we come back from the break. The call-in number is 615-737-9522. My name is Roy Matlock Jr., and we'll be right back.
This is Roy Matlock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour. Now, back to the Money and Business Hour with Roy Matlock Jr.
All right, Roy Matlock Jr. here, and we are back talking money. And when we went into the break, we were talking about insurance. And so far today, we've talked about how to set up a budget or a cash flow plan. What about an emergency fund? What should it be? How to eliminate debt. This is all the heavy lifting stuff that's not fun. And then we just got through talking about liability insurance for your car and home, health insurance. And then as we went into the break, we began to talk about, you know, the difference in life insurance and things like that. And so the phone number, if you have questions, you can call in 615-737-9522. I'll be taking that. You can also visit roymatlockjr.com and download a copy of a book called How Money Works, which will go into great detail on all of these things that we're covering today. It's about a 35-page book to help you get started when it comes to your money. But we're going to go to a caller right now. I have Jason on the line. What's your question, Jason? Okay, I got you. So Jason is not on the line, but he says, what is the difference between term and whole life insurance? And so, Jason, if you're out there listening right now, what the difference is between term and whole life insurance is there's two types of insurance. One is called cash value. Another one is just pure insurance or term insurance. And all insurance begins with pure insurance, and that's the cost of death of a death benefit. So if you're out there right now and you have children, debt, mortgages, things like that, we believe you're at the peak responsibility years in your life when it comes to insurance needs. Because if anything happened to you, you know, when I was had small children, if anything happened, I mean, they depended on me to take care of the bills. They were not able to support themselves. Now they're grown, and as a result of being grown, if something happened, they can work and they can do things. So during the time when I first got started, when I had no money, the only thing that supported everything was my ability to earn money. Had something happened to me with small children, I needed the most death insurance that I could, or the most income replacement that I could afford. And by doing that, buying term insurance, only death benefit, no cash value, is the most that you can get for the least amount of money. And so I was able to go out and buy a big term policy. At that time, I locked it in for 20 years and was able to do that. Then, you know, I learned about the difference, you know, about term and cash value. So remember, all life insurance is death insurance to start. It's a death benefit. So if you buy a $100,000 policy, and whether it's term or whole life, it's going to pay $100,000. Now, what is cash value? Well, cash value insurance is where they take the premium that you would pay for the death benefit and they add to it generally about 3 times to 4 times more in premium to build up what is called a cash value. So if you paid $300 a year for term, the same amount of cash value would be $1,200. Now, if you die, it pays the same thing. Now, I don't have to be real smart to think through this and say, you're telling me I can pay $300 and my family's going to get the same amount of money than if I pay $1,200. And I'm like, yeah, well, that right there in itself, if I'm wanting to buy life insurance, that makes total sense to me. Okay, I would rather pay $300 to get the same amount as $1,200. But what most of the time happens that I run into people that have the wrong kind, meaning cash value, what they have is they have not enough coverage because it costs $1,200 to get the right amount of coverage, and they only have $1,200, and it takes that much in term. So what they need rather than $100 is they need $400, and they can do that for the $1,200. If they buy cash value, it would cost them $5,000 to be able to do that. So most of the time, people can't afford even to buy enough life insurance when it's cash value. So then the question is, would I be better paying $1,200 and saving in the life insurance policy, or would I be better paying $1,200 and take $300 or whatever I pay for the term and put the difference into, say, a retirement plan or a mutual fund or even in the 401k? Well, here's the difference. If you put it in the cash value, the first 1 to 3 years that you put that money in there, they're going to fee you to the point that if you want anything out of it, in most cases up to 3 years, there's no cash value in it. So right off the bat, you paid $900 too much. You put it in for three. You bought the term for $300, or in the case maybe you doubled, got triple the coverage, and you paid $600, and you put $600 into a mattress. You would at least have $600, whereas if you put it in the cash value policy, you're not going to have anything. The next question is, what kind of control do I have on my money when I put it into a life insurance policy? Well, if you put it in the life insurance policy to begin with, they fee you to death. Then after that, if you want to take it out, they will loan that money to you. Now, the question is, you put it in there, so whose money are you actually taking out and paying interest to take out? It's your own money. And so I tell people, why would you put it in a place that you can't get it out and you have to pay interest to get it out? Now, they will deduct the loan off the death benefit if you die. So if you had a $10,000 loan against your policy, they only pay $90,000. So I tell people, well, just buy the term. Don't save your money over here with the life insurance company. Put your money into your 401k through your work, or put it into a Roth IRA or a mutual fund, whatever you want to do, and then have enough coverage in the event something happens. And then the last thing is this. If you have a $50,000 cash value and you have a $100,000 policy and you die, then here's what happens. It pays $100,000. It doesn't pay the 100 and your cash value. So what I tell people is never couple together life insurance and saving money. Your insurance agent is going to tell you, buy cash value insurance. But the reason is because they make more money doing it, selling cash value. That's the only reason. No consumer has ever said, buy life insurance and buy cash value insurance. And so if you're out there right now and you've got some of the wrong kind of insurance, my suggestion to you is buy term insurance, save your money elsewhere. You'll be way better off. And you can visit roymatlockjr.com, download How Money Works, and we've got a whole section on just how to buy all of the right insurances. Now, what we just covered, if you've been on the listening in this morning, we covered the defense position to get you in a place where you can move forward. And defense is not losing. That's a good budget, a good cash flow plan, an emergency fund, eliminating all consumer debt that's non-mortgage debt, and buying all of the things insurance-wise that you need to have to make sure that nobody's going to sue you. You're not going to get wiped out if you go to the hospital, if you die, okay, if you have a wreck, whatever it may be. Now you put yourself in a position to go win, and we're going to move into the winning stages now. So how do we go about the next stage? Well, the next stage about winning is going in and putting yourself in a position to where you start getting excited about moving forward. And when you start saving money, you can get excited. I know I have an app on my phone that's tied into my bank account, and my bank account's tied into my mutual fund account. And so one of the things that I always tell people is it's just a decision whether or not you have savings or not. It's just a decision whether or not you want to get ahead financially. You can either spend it or you can save it. It's up to you. You can make decisions every day to go left or you can go right. I walk into people's houses and I'll walk into one house. They make the same money. They're about the same age, that kind of deal. And what they've been doing is spending it. And I look and they're going 55 miles an hour into debt in one direction. I walk in the next place. They stayed out of debt. They started investing money, and their investments are going 55 miles the other direction. They're now traveling 110 miles an hour apart, and one's getting wealthy and getting security, and the other one is getting frustrated and going down the tubes. So what happens is it's a decision. Do you want to spend it or save it? And so I was telling somebody it's only a decision. And so you're driving home at night and you say, I'm hungry. Let's go over here and go to this restaurant and have dinner. And you end up going in there and you spend $60 or $80 or even more. And you decide, no, I think I'm just going to save it instead. Well, the problem is saving money, if it's not simple, then guess what happens? Nobody does it. And so if it's not easy to do, nobody will do it. Now, it's very easy if you want to pay somebody. We've got bill pay. We got Venmo. We've got PayPal. And then, of course, Amazon will take all of your money 24 hours a day, 7 days a week worldwide. You can buy anything anytime. All you got to do is get your phone out and you can go out and buy something. I mean, it makes good sense to me that Amazon guy's the wealthiest guy on the planet because he gets people to buy from him 24/7, 7 days a week, you know, at any given time, all over the world, worldwide. That's a great business, all right? But it doesn't help you get financial independent. So what you need is a system. So right on my phone, I have a system, and I can just log in, and then rather than taking that $60 and going to dinner, I change the way I look at it, and I say, I'm just going to save it. I hit the button, and within a couple seconds, I'm on my mutual fund account, and I hit buy, and I put $60 in my mutual fund, and the next thing you know, I saved it. So you can either spend it or you can save it, but you got to have a plan in place to save it. I tell people all the time, hey, the most important account you can have is your investment account that you can put money into, tied to your bank account, that you can put it in anytime. You know, you can put $5 in most of the mutual funds once it's set up. You can put $5. Say, hey, I'm just not going to spend it today. I'm going to save it. I'm going to put it in there. And you go home and you look at your account. You get excited because then you just invested your money rather than spend your money. So 737-9522 is the number, 615-737-9522. We're going to be back in just a minute. We're going to start talking about the different places that you can put your money. Where should you invest? Should you do retirement now, college now? What about paying off your home? We're going to get into all those kind of things because saving money and moving forward with your money is why we do this stuff. I mean, why would we work every day of our life fighting traffic, getting up early, doing all those kind of things, and then at the end of the day, say, what happened to our family business? Did we make a profit? And you're like, no, we didn't make a profit. What we did, we spent everything we made. So this next segment is going to be something you really want to listen to. We're going to teach you how to get ahead and save your money. We'll be right back.
This is Roy Mathock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour. Now, back to the Money and Business Hour with Roy Mathock Jr.
All right, we're back, and we're going to talk money. And now we're moving into the fun part, and that's the offense in building your financial plan. And that's saving money, investing money, things like that. And so let's start with what is the order in which you want to move down the path when it comes to starting to accumulate wealth. You know, we've taken our debt payments down. We've paid them off. We've got an emergency fund to keep us from going in debt. We've got all of our insurance in place, so nobody's going to wipe us out that way. We're on a plan to spend less than we make. So what should we do next? Should we fund the children's college education? Should we try to pay our house off? What should we do? So this is the order in which I would recommend you go. You know, everybody's excited about their home and all that kind of thing, but should we pay it off first? Absolutely not. I see no reason to ever do that, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit at the end of the tail end of the show. But to start with, we go toward retirement plans. So what is the goal? The goal is to get to a point where you can stop. And to stop, you need to get it in your brain and think through this and say, man, I got to save my money to get to that point. Now, where do I save it? What do I do with it? Well, to begin with, what do you need? The rule of thumb is you need 15 to 20 times your desired annual retirement income. So let's say that you figure out that you need $50,000 a year. And you've got Social Security on top of that, but you want 50 grand a year that you can pull out, and you'd like to have a little bit of inflation guard in there. So as you get older, you know, you're not still at 50, you get a little bit more than that. So you're going to need about $1 million. All right, 20 times 50 is $1 million. So $1 million at 5%, that's going to give you 50 grand a year. So that's kind of a rule of thumb. And that way you can, if you get your money invested in a reasonably, you know, conservative account and you get 7 or 8% on it, you've got 3% going back into the fund. So therefore, each year you should get a slight increase in your income when you're retiring. So what you want to do is start thinking about, okay, my goal is I need that. All right. Now, every 20 years, you need to be thinking, inflation's going to make me have to have twice that much. So let's say you've got 20 years to go right now to retirement, and you want to have $1 million. You need to really think in terms of you need about $2 million. All right. And so $1 million today is $2 million then. So how do we go about accumulating that money? Well, the first thing I would do is I would go and get me a compound interest calculator. You can go right onto the internet and just type in compound interest calculator. And so you go to that compound interest calculator and you say, well, if I know what I'm doing with my money, a 9% return over a long haul is very doable, all right, if you have your money invested. At 9%, I've got this much money, and I've got a $2 million goal. So 20 years from now, I have $100,000 saved right now. It's going to grow to X, and that's going to mean, you know, $100,000 is at 9%. It's going to double about 2.5 times, so you're going to have $200,000, $400,000. You're going to have maybe $400,000 or $500,000. So now you're $1.5 million short. So what are you going to do? You're then going to take that compound interest calculator and solve for the answer. And the answer is you need to save $800 a month in order to be able to do this. Now, what if you get, if it says you need to save $1,200 a month and you only have the ability to save $800 a month? So save the $800 a month, and then every year set a goal as soon as you get a raise to make to put more money in. So now what we're going to do is we're going to save $800 this year, but we're going to save $8.25 next year, whatever it may be, until we get to that goal. Then that way you have a plan of action to put yourself in a position to where you're financially independent. So it's all math. It's a math problem that you have to solve. But if you don't solve the problem and you don't put down on paper what you need to do, then it's pure luck if you get out there and end up putting yourself in a position to be okay. So what you need to do is you need to look and say, what is the number? The number is 20 times my desired income. 20 times my desired income. If I want 100 grand, I need 2 million. If I want 50 grand, I need 1 million. Then we're going to inflate it based on, there's a calculator called the U.S. Inflation Calculator, I think it's what it is. And it, you can go right into that. It's I've actually got it here on my phone, and it's called the usinflationcalculator.com. How about that? So you just go right in there, and you can go to that, and usinflationcalculator.com, and you can go in and say, hey, today, what do I need? If I went back 20 years ago, it goes all the way back to 1913. You say, in 1913, $1. All right, to give you an idea about inflation, it says right here $1 in 1913 is now $25.36. Cumulative rate of inflation, 2,436.4% is the inflation rate since that time. So we know inflation happens, and so we want to inflate our dollar out. So now once we've done that, where do we save the money? Well, there's a number of places. To start with, we need to look at our 401k. 73% of the population is covered under a 401k. Somewhere between 60 and 90% of the people will participate. 60 is the low end. 90 is actually where companies opt you. You have to opt out. They put you in, and you have to make a decision to opt out. When you start doing your 401k, you want to max it out. Max out all of the matching funds, things like that. If you have a 403b at work through maybe your hospital or a teacher, take advantage of that. These are pre-tax dollars. There's actually for now some after Roth 401ks where you can do after-tax dollars. The only people I would tell to do that is if you're very young and you're getting started and doing well that way. And so we take and we start maxing out those accounts. If you don't have a retirement plan through work, or if you're self-employed, there's options as well, a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA. The difference in a Roth and a traditional, a Roth IRA is you put in dollars after tax dollars, and it grows tax-free. Who's a good candidate for that? I would say young people, because you're going to have a lot of time to be able to save that money. And then when you get out to retirement age, you'll be able to pull it out tax-free. So you pay it today and pull it out tax-free. That's a Roth IRA. You can put $6,000 into a Roth IRA now. It just went up $500 a year. And if you're over 50, you can put $7,000 in. So if you don't do a Roth IRA, let's say you're at or near retirement and you're a big income earner and you haven't saved that much, I might go with a traditional IRA. And a traditional IRA is pre-tax. You take it off your income taxes when you put it in, and then you pay taxes when you start pulling it out. So that is a traditional IRA. If you are self-employed, you can do what is called a SEP IRA. And what that is you can take, if you're an independent contractor, self-employed, it's really designed for anybody that is self-employed that doesn't have employees working for them. A SEP will allow you to put 25% of your profit in. You can put a little over $50,000 in pre-tax. So if you're making $200,000, you put 25% in, then you're only going to pay taxes on $150,000. And so a SEP is what I've been doing for many, many, many years, is I always put my money into my SEP account. And so now that we've done that, the question is, where do we put the money? Well, I have always believed, I started investing in mutual funds back 35 years ago. And I've always done that kind of thing. And so what is a mutual fund? People ask all the time, what is a mutual fund? Well, a mutual fund is a professional money manager that takes about 1% to manage mutually all of the fund shareholders' money. So that allows someone that's got $50 a month, if they want to put money in a mutual fund, they can open a mutual fund with $50 a month. Or they've got $200 or $300 they just want to put in, they can do that. So anyone can get involved in mutual funds. Some mutual funds have long, long track records. I know one that's got over 80 years of track record, where you can look back and say, if I put my money in, 20 years ago, what would it be worth today? Or 30 years ago, 40 years ago, in the case with that one, over 80 years that you can look back and say, how would it have done? And that goes into the planning process. And so you can put your money in mutual funds. That's my recommendation. Now, the question then is, what mutual fund should I own? Where, there's more mutual funds than there are stocks today. I think there's over 9,000 mutual funds. So that's where getting with somebody, in many cases, is your best option, that they can help you to pick those funds out. But the real question is, what type of fund? And we're going to get into that a little bit today, and then next week I'm going to continue down this path. But a mutual fund goes from a very conservative, what's called a money market fund. That's something that would be used for an emergency fund. Then we have bond funds, and that's what a bond is, a loan. We don't think about going to the bank or anything like that as loaning money, but in essence, we're just loaning money out to the bank, and they pay us a very small interest rate. A bond has different types of bond funds, or if you want to be in a government fund, it would invest in government bonds. If you put it into a municipal bond, it invests in municipalities, and it pays tax-free income. You have corporate bonds, bonds that are issued by companies that are A-rated companies, something like Exxon or something like that, would bar from the public. So they'll pay you more than you'll get if you go put it at the bank. So you start, but you have risk. What is your risk? Well, Exxon could go under. Chances are they're not going under, but they could go under. If you go up higher than that, want a higher interest rate on bonds, you buy what's called a junk bond. But what bonds are, and funds, bond funds are things that are on the conservative side of the portfolio. They're a loan and they pay interest. That's what a bond fund does. Now, on the other side, we have stock funds, and that's where they put your money into the stock market. In between bonds and stocks are what is called a balance fund. A balance fund is where you might have half the money in stocks, half the money in bonds. Then from there, we start moving from a balance fund into what's called a growth and income fund. A growth and income fund would be similar to owning, I always compare it to a rental house. You have growth of the value of the home, and you collect income on rent. So what happens is when you go into a growth and income fund, you own the stock, and it also pays dividends. Then we have growth funds. We then have international funds and global funds. Growth funds invest in the Googles of tomorrow or the Googles of today. Growth in the international funds are outside the U.S. And then we have aggressive growth funds, which would be the Googles of tomorrow. Well, I hope you enjoyed the show today. I want you to visit my website, roymatlockjr.com, and download How Money Works, because it will help you really move in the direction that you want to go. I'll be back next week. We're going to continue on this. RoyMatlockJr.com to get any of this information. Once again, we appreciate your listening, and I will see you next week.